Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. Joining me again by popular demand is Brian to talk about the sustainability efforts here at the monastery, because after the update last week, we had such an overwhelming response from folks hearing that they were really very inspired by hearing Brian talk about what's possible in the world of sustainability and specifically what's happening here at the monastery, and wanting to have more, some sort of concrete ways to implement that in their own homes. So Brian is here with us tonight to talk about how people might go about doing that. So thanks for being with us again, Brian.
Thanks for inviting me back on.
So if someone were wanting to start, you know, doing this in their own little plot of land behind their house or even in their house, I mean, as Sherry mentioned, there are ways that even inside one's own home, you could begin to take steps like this. What would be some of the top three to five ways that they go about doing that?
I think number one is to just really get a good feel for what permaculture means to them, because it's a very democratic kind of movement, and so people all over the world are working towards permaculture, but it means different things to different people. And so as you go about getting information, you're going to have people with different mindsets about things. And so it's really important to have a firm idea, what does permaculture mean to me, so that when you're getting information, you know, okay, maybe these guys aren't going in the direction I want to spend my time going in. Maybe I want to look over somewhere else. A great example of that, I think, is, I've been taking a couple of classes with a fellow in Oakland who runs a site called Kijani Grows, which is aquaponics. And so, he has a degree in robotics, and permaculture for him is very, very technological. He's automating everything he does. He's trying to make minimal effort, make use of the technology we have to have sort of self-sustaining systems that run themselves. For a lot of people, permaculture actually is a much more of a primitive kind of affair, using a lot of simple hand tools, really accessible technology. So there's this entire appropriate technology movement that's all about using simple technologies that people can understand, manipulate easily. So
what is it about permaculture that's calling to me, and what are my kind of values, almost, if you will, around it, and therefore having that inform what direction I take and which guidance I'm receiving from which sources?
Exactly. And just having an awareness of that, so that you can come into some information source that may have good information that may be operating from a different set of assumptions about what permaculture means. So, for example, I'm a vegetarian, but a lot of people who are interested in permaculture aren't vegetarians, and so they'll have all these practices that involve using animals in different ways, and then I have to come to that and say, okay, so they have chickens involved in their system here, but a big part of their calculation is they're going to eat the chickens at some point. I'm not interested in eating chickens. Are the chickens still worth having in this system?
Yeah, we ran into that in Cantalomba. Same thing. What are you going to do with the chickens once you... Yeah, right.
So just having a good idea of that going in is going to make it a lot harder for conditioning to come in and make problems as you're going about trying to figure out how you want to implement your permaculture project.
Well put. Yep. So not just because this, quote, expert over here on permaculture is saying this doesn't necessarily mean that's the direction I'm going to go in.
Exactly. And I think the number two step is to find out what's happening in your area. Find out if there's a community you can get plugged into. Find out if there are people, whose expertise you can learn from or who can help you in setting up your project. If you're in a major metropolitan area, there's many urban areas have permaculture organizations working within them. Some of them have large installations. So, for example, I live in San Francisco, and we have the Hayes Valley Farm, which is an urban farm, and they have all sorts of information on their website, and you can get information about what works in the San Francisco area for the climate and all that, what plants work, what methods work. So it's very sort of context-specific. Seattle is putting in a 7-acre food forest as we speak. There are a lot of people making major strides towards this in urban areas, and if you happen to live in a rural area, there's a chance that there's an organic farm near you,
yeah,
or you know, a larger food forest or some set of people who are working in this space and can teach you about the methods and practices.
So are you saying that in the city of Seattle they're putting in a 7-acre food forest?
Exactly. On public land. It's called the Beacon Food Forest.
Oh, my gosh. That's exciting.
And you know, people all over the place are working towards this. So here in the foothills at Columbia College, I just happen to have a friend whose family works for Columbia College, and they mentioned that their ag sciences department, the students there, have been lobbying to put in a food forest at Columbia College for several years. So sort of behind the scenes, people are making the effort to make it more accessible to people.
So, yeah, and that's so perfect because, of course, it's going to really vary. I mean, if you're interested in sustainability and what works locally and all that, the practices and what grows well is going to vary a lot from, I mean, drastically from one location to another. Like San Francisco to the foothills, it's a completely different climate. So finding an organization that's working in the same climate as you are would be of huge benefit.
Exactly. And that local information is really important. And that actually, so my third point is related to that. It's just assess your space before you start letting yourself get carried away, you know, with these dreams of a massive food forest. Well, if you live, you know, in a tiny apartment with no backyard, that's going to open up an avenue for frustration. So just really kind of taking stock of how much room do I have, what's possible here. And there's a huge range of scales that you can operate at. So you could have, you know, a little windowsill herb garden, mm-hmm. and right there you're just practicing, you know, having a deeper relationship with your food and providing some of your food within the urban context for yourself. You could have, you know, a little pallet vertical garden, so you can turn a, you know, recycle a pallet into an herb garden and have that leaning up against the building or something like that. You can have a hanging garden. You can, you know, if you're getting into a bigger space and you have a backyard, you can have no-till, what they're called, reach beds, because you can, they're designed so that you can reach into every portion of them without actually stepping into the bed so that you don't compress the soil.
Yeah.
And as you get bigger and bigger, you could have, you know, a perennial garden, or you can have a food forest, which actually is mixed sort of perennials and annuals in a larger scale ecological unit. So really,
and do you need a pretty good sized space to do a food forest?
I've heard of folks working on a 1/4 acre.
Okay. Yeah, all right. So you could, if you had a really big backyard, you could do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that Martin Crawford, who's a researcher in the UK who's really big on food forests, has, I think, 500 species of plants in 2 acres.
Wow.
Kind of an extremist as far as diversity is concerned. So, you know, if you're looking at the small scale, you could have 50 plants.
You know, it's, and I think you said it last week, but that piece about going online and doing a little research for yourself, if for nothing else, to me is such a source of inspiration. You know, when you were saying the thing about the pallets, I was actually looking online, not even about permaculture, but about pallets and building with pallets for another reason. And I saw this beautiful, I mean, I think it was an apartment, this beautiful garden made out of pallets, as you say, vertical. It was just stunning. And how much fun that is to realize that certainly, no matter where you live in what space, there is something you can do. There's some way you can plant that's compatible with the way your living space is.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I forgot to mention this up at point number one, but for me, permaculture really is about, you know, making the sort of culture that makes human life indefinitely sustainable on this planet. So that's about our assumptions about how we should interact with our environment, and our behaviors around how we interact with our environment, our beliefs about what's the optimum and whatnot. So there's always some way to engage with, well, what are my beliefs and assumptions?
Yeah. So it makes it such a good partner to awareness practice.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I suspect, at least for me, the thing that makes it the most sustainable is it makes the human happy to live that way. You know, it's just so joyful to live in that simple, that way that makes sense, that kind of puts us in sync with all of life around us. And if you have happy humans, you probably have compassionate and loving and kind and all those things as well.
Exactly. I have, so, you know, I live in San Francisco, and it's not a big space, and so I actually have my germination station in my room. So all my little seedlings are in my room. So every morning I get to wake up and say hello to all my little seedlings and go, oh, hey, everybody, how much did you grow overnight? How are you doing? Oh, let's look around here. Let's get your light on, and we'll water you. And that's just how I start my day.
Wow.
And that is a deeply life-affirming sort of experience to have. And so there I am, you know, changing my assumption about how I relate to food and growing things and whatnot the moment I start my day.
I love it. I love it. Well, Brian, we're up against the clock, so thank you so much for being with us again.
All righty.
And we'll be hearing from you in the next few weeks, I'm sure.
Sounds great.
Okay. Good night.
Night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Brian. Thank
you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Well, that was fun.
Are you thinking about getting that palette and putting it up against the... as soon as this show is over, I'm Googling that, I'll tell you, because I can't picture it in my mind, and I can't wait to see what it looks like.
Uh-huh.
I'm one of those people who just loves palettes. I share that with Jen. You know, I think we should just make everything in the world out of palettes. If somebody wants to Google building with palettes, you'll see some of the cutest houses in the world made out of these things.
Wow.
So I can't wait to see the little gardens.
Wow.
That. And, yeah, and the other thing about this, Jen mentioned, you know, we probably hear from Brian again in the next little while, and we will, and other people on the property, because we have so many of these projects going right now that they're just kind of, people have to line up to tell us about the various projects that are going in. So it's good. And again, an awful lot of them are things that that people can do. You don't have to have 320 acres as we do, and you don't even have to have your garden in your bedroom. But they're just really innovative kinds of things that people usually don't think of, and I mean I certainly didn't, and it's so fun, so exciting to hear about them.
Isn't it great what the free mind can find?
Yes.
When
yes.
we're not stuck in conditioning and our fixed beliefs about how things are and what this is for and all of that.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And the other point that I think the two of them were really making is it's just such a joyful way to live, you know, to realize that we all of the beautiful, what a beautiful living planet this is. And that we share this in such intimate ways if we're open to being present in that way. And it's just so much happier than, as you say, you know, often conditioning's world about whatever it happens to be griping about at the time. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Fun.
Great.
Yeah. I bet you have some announcements.
I do. The Rest and Be Thankful retreat will be offered May 17th through 19th, and then again in July 5th through 7th. It's a shorter weekend retreat. It includes walks in nature, art and yoga workshops, periods of meditation, simple, delicious meals to allow your heart to open to the generosity of life.
Yes, and now talk about a gorgeous time to be at the monastery. Right now, it is just, it's breathtaking. And through that time in May, and probably actually through the July, it'll still have this lush look that it has right now.
Mm-hmm. Great. Great. Mm-hmm. And now is the time to sign up for There's Nothing Wrong With You, which is mm-hmm. offered May 4th through 11th at the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Sherry, it's a great first-time retreat and is excellent to repeat again and again.
It is. It's the foundation, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And at this retreat, you'll gain a clearer perspective on how you live your life and how to find compassion for yourself and others.
You know, with everything that we've been talking about so far, if we don't know there's nothing wrong, starting out, if there's nothing wrong with me, there's nothing wrong with you, there's nothing wrong with them, or there's nothing wrong with anything, not much is ever really going to happen for us in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It really is the foundation of the kind of life that we're constantly talking about. Yeah.
Yes. Kind of clearing away conditioning at that very first fundamental level.
Yeah.
The Be the Person You Want to Find retreat will be offered this spring at the monastery. It's a 5-day retreat about bringing compassion to your relationships. And it's based on your book, Sherry, by the same title.
Mm-hmm.
And as you've said many times, Sherry, when we do awareness practice, we become very attractive.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
We must be careful in whole new ways.
And what I see in that is that we meet our own needs. And so when we're interacting with people, you know, those unconscious needs from conditioning are not leaking out in all of these strange ways.
Yes. And then, you know, people will often say with awareness practice and relationships, so what you're saying is then, you know, you're just not going to have a relationship. You just don't, you're not interested in a relationship. You don't need that. And what I always hasten to explain is, you don't need a relationship, which really frees you up to have one if you want one. Because as long as we need, we're coming from karmic conditioning, and it's just not gonna end well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's true. So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to see the schedule or to sign up for any of these retreats. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So here we go.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Barbara from Australia.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I'm okay. I'm pretty good today.
Good.
Wanted to call in and hadn't called in for a while and connect and express my gratitude.
Let us know how you are.
Yeah.
Always a good thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Just trying to sort of, I haven't been not connected. I've been listening quite a lot, but yeah, just wanted to call in and check in.
Mm. Yeah. You know, it makes one of those important statements about Sangha that I never get tired of making. So you can be over there, down there, however we want to talk about it, way on the other side of the world, and you know you're connected because you're listening in and you're participating and all that. But if we never hear from you, we don't know it.
Yeah.
So it's good for us then to hear from the people who are, you know, just to hear from Sangha, period. No, it's funny. We're not conditioned to think about this way. But people do wonder. You know, if we don't hear anything from somebody or hear anything about somebody for a long time, then there's that kind of, oh gosh, I wonder whatever happened to, you know, so it's just good to check in and, you know, we just kind of raise our hand and say, yeah, I'm still here. I'm participating too.
Yeah.
Because it strengthens us.
Yeah.
It strengthens all of us when we know that there's that kind of broad support for what we're all doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it does for me. I've been listening to the archives a lot. It's been a really big time. The last sort of 3 months I've had my relationship end, and Yeah, it's been a kind of pretty difficult period, and the archives has just been like my lifeboat, really. You know, just such a support, listening to them every day. And, you know, I found that when, you know, when I got into really difficult places, that it was the one thing that I was still really able to do, to just go to the computer, turn it on, put on the archives and just have it, have them going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, that reminds me of another thing, another really important point for all of us about Sangha. So there you are listening to the archives of the show, and there's Sangha, and we're all talking about what's going on, and we're all looking at practice and supporting one another in practice. And you might be listening to a show from, you know, 1997. But it's happening right now. And the way that anybody listening, you in this case, but anybody listening to that group of people talking about practice, sharing about practice, that feels like a good use of that word, it's current, it's present. It's not like it's something that happened back then and it's not relevant now. Because where it takes us in listening is into the moment right now. It brings us back to ourselves right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really does. You know, I was amazed at how it does that. And, you know, I was finding, you know, at different times, I was finding the recording and listening difficult to do. Like, I'd try to record and I'd just find myself, you know, holding the recorder and just stopping talking. And yeah, just it was the one thing that really consistently helped to bring me back, just listening. And, you know, and the number of times that I would hear something was just so particularly relevant to, you know, what I was going through or what I needed to hear. Or such a treasure.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that occurs to me as a practice for you or for anybody who's listening, when we get into those kinds of places and we, you know, it's like, I know recording and listening would be supportive, but I don't seem to have anything to say, which is simply an indication, you know, that conditioning is really doing its best to do a number on us. So what you can do is you listen to the person talking, and if I'm doing the show or, you know, whoever is doing my part of the show, and that conversation is going on, and you can stop, you know, when you have an insight, you can stop it right there, and you can record the insight that you had, right? And then you start listening again, and then you stop, and you record the next insight. Whatever it brings up, in the same way that you would do, you know, if we were all sitting around in a group together at the monastery or at a retreat, you know, you put your hands up and you talk about what your process is, you know, what you just saw based on whatever we were doing at the time. And you just keep doing that. And then at a certain point, when you feel like it, I really love to record and listen at breakfast time. That's just, I love breakfast and I love that time of day, and I really enjoy it. And so then you can just listen to your recordings, and it takes you back to that same heart-centered place, that experience of being right here and present with your voice, in the same way that you get to that right here, right now place listening to other folks talk on the archives.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I've found really helpful, I've been doing the coaching, as in awareness coaching, which has been, you know, like the other lifeboat, and listening back to those calls, like recording all of those calls, and, you know, Because then I hear my wisdom and I hear my insights, it's my voice, and you know, when I'm on those calls, I'm in that, you know, more often than not, I'm in that place of center. And yeah, listening back is really powerful because it reminds me of that part in myself.
Yes, 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 yes. And once we realize that that's what this is all about, so I want to get to that open-hearted, centered, right here, right now place, what are all of the things that support me in being in that place? And then we just practice. So that even when I'm not listening to something, I'm very strongly aware of the sensations of that space in my body.
Mm. Yeah.
So eventually, right, you just turn your attention there and you feel that calm, solid, deep, centered feeling just from turning your attention to that same set of sensations in your body.
It's pretty exciting. It's just where I've been looking, just, you know, coming to that but really recently and starting to have an experience of what, you know, I've been hearing that for a long time, but starting to have some experience of it myself.
Yeah, that's thrilling, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
thank you so much.
Yeah, it's thrilling and it's empowering because, you know, we no longer have that kind of nervous sense that it's not that we don't want to be together as a Sangha, but there's something about knowing that if the computer goes down or whatever, I can still get to the place I need to get to on my own.
Because I've, you know, I've had a health situation that's, you know, made it hard for me to get out and connect physically. To be able to find that place, wherever I am, whether there's anyone else with me or not, feels I've been driven, you know, by circumstance in a way to see how important that is, and especially over the last few months, and getting glimpses of it.
And it really gets solid. You know, that expression of the kinds of things that you've been through recently, that's the reason we practice, right? I mean, it's great to practice when the sun is shining and everything's happy and I feel great and it's all going my way. That's a lot of fun. But I'm really practicing so that, pardon me, when it hits the fan, I know that I'm going to be able to be there for myself in a way that sustains me, that I won't forget. The joy will still be there, the comfort, the gratitude, all of that will still be there, no matter what the life circumstances are that I'm being required to go through right now.
I have felt so grateful for the practice that I've done, you know, because it really helped me move through this. And, you know, it's always going to be hard. There's no way around hard, but it was just, you know, I was able to have a different experience.
Because hard life circumstances don't have to equate to suffering.
Yeah, and I, at times, you know, I was in the suffering, but this time I had an awareness of that was suffering that I was adding, and I was really working hard at trying everything I could to not do that, because I didn't need to add any more suffering onto what was happening.
Right. This person is having a hard enough time right now. I don't need to go get distracted and follow self-hate down some primrose path, thank you. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm very happy. It makes me very happy.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Sherry. It's, you know, I feel very supported by the practice and all the tools that are available. And so, yeah, a lot of gratitude.
Good, good, good. All right, then, don't be a stranger, huh?
Okay.
All right.
I won't. I'll call in again soon.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye,
Michael. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us, Barbara. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
You know, Michael, I forgot to tell Barbara that I just finished my third book on Australian history. So I am clearly closing in on a visit to that obviously fabulous place that I've never seen. I like to keep her posted, you know, about my studies of Australian history.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah. So now she knows.
Wonderful.
So she's still listening.
Yes, she is. I can hear that. Okay, great.
What are we going to do next?
We're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Okay. You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there?
Hello.
Oh.
Hello. Who's this? Oh, this is Judy.
Oh, hi, Judy.
Hi. I wasn't expecting it.
Oh, there you are. What's going on?
So after the New Year's retreat,
I
experimented with looking at process versus content.
Uh-huh.
And what appeared was to practice whatever conditioning told me not to do. So, for instance, I was studying Spanish, and I wanted to buy these lessons online, and I heard a lot of negatives, like, oh, we can get it from the library, oh, it's too much money, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
And
said, oh, well, that's clearly for me.
Exactly. That was my clue because it was so strong.
Uh-huh.
And so I purchased it, and it was wonderful.
Uh-huh. Boy, there it is. So
yeah.
if we change purchase to, and so I did it, and it was wonderful.
Mm.
Like we all have so much experience of that being the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm keeping on this paying attention, what strong emotions come, what is the discouragement about?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you
say what the discouragement is about, can you describe that a little bit more? Because I realize I projected that I thought I knew what you meant.
Mm. It mostly centered around, I'm not worth it. It's too scary. It's too risky. You know, stay inside, basically.
Uh-huh.
don't go out.
Uh-huh.
Metaphorically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a scary world out there. Just close down and stay home with me.
Exactly.
Says the voice of,
mm-hmm.
yeah, the devil.
So those are the discouragements about
uh-huh.
my work. And
yeah, and so that's
it.
that's what you're going up against.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the
yeah.
kinds of things that you're saying, okay, well, that's clearly a good direction for me to go in because there's so much negativity around it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a great technique.
Yeah, it was really surprising because in the past I would have believed those things.
Mm-hmm.
And which resulted in disappointment and thinking, well, I wonder what it would have been like, and
yeah.
what is this all about? where are these voices coming from?
You know, I got to tell you, I spend a fair amount of time wondering that myself. What is the point of this? Really, what is the point of this? And so, I don't have any idea, but waking up out of the life that they provide for us is certainly a joyful experience. So perhaps those folks who say, this is the God playing hide and seek, and we're all in the process of waking up out of the belief that we are not a part of divinity. That makes as much sense as anything, right? So, can I, in the face of all of this stuff, all of this, can I continue to choose loving kindness and compassion? I don't know. Maybe it's as simple as that,
So in the midst of all this, can I choose loving compassion?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, so there's all that negativity. You can't, you shouldn't, you'd better not. And what you're choosing is loving kindness and compassion. So what you're saying is, talk about a major crime and sin. She wants to study Spanish.
Terrible?
Yeah, isn't that awful? Oh, my goodness. And so you choose loving kindness and compassion and basically say to the human being, well, of course, it's your life. If that's what you really want, if that would make you happy, that is certainly... It's we don't even say it's harmless. It's actually quite helpful, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great thing to do, to learn a language that's not one's own, and to it's so expansive, and that's a great thing to do. Yes, let's support her in doing that. That's a very, very, very different life choice from just stay inside, keep your head down, and wait to die.
Right. Yeah, that's really been fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very happy. Who knows? We might see you at New Year's again. Who knows? We might see you somewhere before.
I hope so. I'm working towards it.
Yeah, that was a great
moving
retreat,
in that direction.
Wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
That was a great retreat. I thought.
Yes.
I thought it was a very fun retreat.
Yes, yes. It opened up so many avenues for me.
Yeah.
To explore.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff there. Well, obviously, if since then you're focusing on process and not content and making those kinds of choices, you got a lot.
Huge.
Yeah, very good.
Yes. Deep gratitude.
Right. And
thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you. Good night.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Judy. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
My name is Judy Too.
Well, hello, Judy Too. How are you?
I'm fine. And I have a question about the New Year's retreat also.
Well,
something that came out of the retreat.
What is that?
Well, when you and I were talking, one of the things we realized was that what lights me up is being as a new project. It could be just about anything, just having a new project. And what I've noticed is that I get all excited about projects, but once I get into it, like just a few minutes into it, it can even be something like a Pilates class, then these voices start, I just can't wait till this is over. I'm just sick of this.
Oh, yeah.
I got to get out of here.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand. I mean, I was so jazzed about the project, and invariably, I get those messages as soon as I get started.
Yeah. So do you have any projections onto that? Any ideas about what might be going on there?
Well, somehow it switches from excitement to work. This is something I have to do now.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Let me put another spin on it, okay?
Please.
When you are in that state of excitement, you know, you just, we say you love a project.
Uh-huh.
But really, you're just lit up.
Right.
Right. So first you're lit up, and then you start looking for something to do with your lit upness. Right?
Oh. I thought the lit upness came from the something to do. But you're saying it's the other way around?
I think so. Because if you think about it, you know, you have all this energy and this excitement, and then something arises for you to do. Yeah?
Oh, okay.
Okay? And so, now, I mean, they can come really close together, but the energy causes it to occur to you that you'd like to do something. So it can be, you know, if you're a little kid or if you were a puppy, say, for instance, you would feel all this life force, this vitality, and you would just jump up and start running around.
Uh-huh.
That's what kids and animals do when they have an abundance of life force, right? So here you have all this energy in your body, and now you're gonna do this thing. The doing this thing really is irrelevant. You could just sit there or stand there and feel all of that energy and life force. But we're conditioned to find that uncomfortable. And so, it's okay, because what happens when we step back and watch ourselves function as creatures, we realize that the energy just rises and falls. Now, because of karmic conditioning, ego is able to interfere with that. So when the energy is low, you start getting messages that you need a cup of coffee or you need some tea. And if the energy is too high, then maybe you need a glass of wine or you need to, you know, or maybe you're a person who just does it all naturally. So if you're feeling low energy, then you, you know, you sit and read a book or you take a nap or something, and you're high energy and you go out and you do some sort of exercise, okay? Mm-hmm. But we're constantly modulating the amount of life force that we're feeling, because our identity is dependent upon a particular range of life force.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what upsets people so much as they age, when they don't feel well. You know, those when there's a loss, and there's what we call depression. That sort of
uh-huh.
What's so upsetting is I don't feel like me. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So there you are, and you're all lit up, and you decide you're going to go take a Pilates class. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were allowed to just be lit up through that Pilates class,
uh-huh.
Then what would happen to you is you would come out of the class and you would look around and say, okay, what do I want to do now? And you would take your lit-upness and you would go do whatever the next thing is. And when you're a little kid, you know, when you're 3 years old or 4 years old even, maybe five, depending on how you were raised, maybe even a little older, that's how you spend your days. You just go from one thing that lights you up to the next thing that lights you up until somebody interferes with you. Okay?
Now, is that what you mean when you talk about doing what life is offering you at the moment?
Yes,
if you're
in that place where you're just tuned into the form being animated, then that's what will happen with you.
Okay.
Okay, and you can go about doing whatever it is that is next in that same lit up way. Okay, as long as you just stay present with life. Yeah?
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Okay. But here's what happens. And this is you'll watch this now. All right. So there you are, you've got all this lit up energy and the voices start in.
Uh-huh.
And by the time they finish with you, you're not lit up a bit.
That's right.
You're not excited about anything because they have sucked all the life force out of you. And that's why they start in.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, you know, so they're saying, I can't wait for this to be over. You know, oh, God, what do you do these kinds of things?
Right, yeah.
And that's literally, they have attached, they've attached a conduit to you, and the
uh-huh.
energy in your body is being siphoned off through your attention, okay? Because you are. Now you're not in the class any longer. You're not even in your body any longer.
Right.
You're just in relationship with these voices and
uh-huh.
basically believing them, right? So
yeah,
the energy is transferred from you to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, you're dissatisfied and sick of it, and then you're really open to being beaten up, right?
Right.
Well, that was a waste of time and money. Why do you do this? Now,
right.
if you think about that, I can't wait for this to be over. People live their lives in that attitude of mind. I can't wait for this to be over. I can't wait for this to be over. You know, you look forward to something and then I can't wait for this to be over. And what it amounts to is I can't wait for this life to be over, because that will go on. And the bottom line is just waiting for life to be over. And of course, before long, it will be. But if you realize that you are the lit up and egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is the I can't wait for this to be over. I'm sick of this. I hate it. I don't want to do this. Okay?
Uh-huh.
So which one is you and which one
uh-huh.
is it? Then armed with that information, you can start bringing the attention back to you. So one simple practice way to do that is just to say, okay, who wants to do Pilates? Because somebody does.
Uh-huh.
Okay? You let that part of you be in the class. Okay, give all of your attention to the part of you who wants to be in a Pilates class, and nothing is left over for attending to and giving the energy to the voices.
Okay, okay.
And you have to do that with everything, right? So
uh-huh.
I just had a very lit up project. I took everything out of my house and cleaned it from top to bottom. I was so excited. It was so much fun. Okay, and so it's just staying with, you know, that was a particular part of me who wanted to do that, right?
Uh-huh.
And all that life force was available for that person to be able to do that, and she got to do it. Okay? If anybody else had come in with another, and people did, right, come in with different ambitions, not even karmic conditioning, but just folks with different ambitions, and it's, no, you know, we'll do that, but another time, because right now, she gets to clean this house, which she's wanted to do forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
then all the life force. Uh-huh.
Even though there's an ebb and flow to the energy level, you're suggesting that we can still live in a lit up place with the ebb and flow.
That's exactly right.
It
because
doesn't have
you
to go
can
from
be
excited to depression. Okay.
That's right. Because you can be just as lit up about lying in the sun reading a book, or taking a nap, or going for a walk, as, you know, going for a run or starting a new business or, you know, anything else. If we are with life as it animates us, then everything that we need to be cared for is given to us every day.
Okay.
Can you picture it?
Yeah, I can actually. But it's
mm-hmm.
way different than how I've lived my life. So
it's way different from the way almost everybody lives life. Because, you know, when I start talking about it's a 3, a 4, a 5, a 6-year-old, you know, probably not, unless you have memories of yourself being off you know, playing by yourself or playing with your friends or that sort of thing. But as soon as karmic conditioning begins to come in and add the shoulds and fears and the feeling bad and all of that sort of thing, then we're moving away from just being lit up. And it's not, as karmic conditioning would have us believe, it's not a matter of you're completely indulgent and selfish if you're in the lit up place, and you're responsible and good and that sort of thing if you're living with karmic conditioning. Not at all. In fact, exactly the opposite. You know, life will guide you to be completely responsible and do what you're called upon to do and all of that. And you'll also have plenty of time to rest and relax and play and meditate and, you know, take long hot baths and read in the sunshine.
Okay. Thank you so much. This is very helpful.
Good. I'm glad.
Very helpful.
Let me know how it goes, okay?
I will.
All right.
Promise.
Thanks, Judy.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Judy. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we're going to hear an important message, and then we'll come back on the air.
All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. We have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry, it's Karen.
Well, hello, Karen. How are you?
Hi. Well, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Good, good, good. What's going on?
Well, I'm just keeping with my calling in because...
Because you wanted to.
Yeah, because I want to, and conditioning doesn't want me to, and I just figure this is just what I'm going to be doing for a while.
That's right. This is another one of those... conditioning says no, 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 no. I must say yes, 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 yes.
Yes, exactly. And I am looking at something and working with something in my life right now.
Uh-huh.
And I'll see if I can talk about it more in terms of process. But it's this. It's just been going on forever. But sort of this over sense of responsibility. And even to the point where, and I know I've talked about it before, where I feel responsible for other people's experience sometimes, and I know that's not what I want to do, number one, and I know it's coming from a conditioned place, and where I've kind of gotten to with that is I'm working with my, I've kind of seen that where it ended up for me is when I really looked deeply at it was my own sense of inadequacy. It's sort of what drives it.
Uh-huh. And can you make that connection for me? So do you mean that you're projecting your inadequacy onto other people?
Well, it's more like, it's mostly in my, with the people that I'm really close to.
Uh-huh.
And that I want them to be okay. And so, if they say they have, you know, something that's not going okay for them, I will want to somehow take that on and do everything I can to make that be okay for them. And where I'm seeing the inadequacy piece is that I think when I really looked at that, I don't think that I feel adequate if they're not okay.
Yes. Okay. So if they're struggling or suffering, whether is there a feeling that you haven't done enough? That if you were the right person or whatever, you could make it so that didn't happen for them?
No, it's more that I can't bear it if they're. I would have said long ago, and I probably said, I really suffer over other people's suffering.
Yeah. So and it's just too painful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you attempt to jump in and do everything to help them be all right so that you don't have to feel the pain of knowing how much they're suffering.
Yeah, yeah. That, and I mean, I don't even know if most things have gotten to the point where really basically I can't jump in really. I mean, things now are not things that I can, like if someone has a health problem or, you know, those aren't things that I can really
you can't
jump
fix
in
it.
And I can't fix it. And, mm-hmm. and yet, and that just seems where I always end up is that I, you know, is they're adequate, but I know they're adequate because they're doing it, but it just feels like I'm not adequate to bear it.
Okay, so if we, right, okay, there, you made the connection that I hope that it was the direction you were going in because it's the one I was going in. So what it comes down to is you won't be able, this is my language, okay, so you make it, turn it into your language, but you won't be able to stand the way you feel when whatever this is happening to a loved one.
Yeah, I've never exactly heard it in those words, but that is, I think that's it, because I can't think of what else that would be, I don't think I'd be able to stand the way I feel.
Yeah, and you know,
which
Karen,
has nothing to do with them. I mean, that is
right.
Sad because it has nothing to do with them.
That's right. Sort of. I mean, it does in that, first of all, I want to say I don't think it's as unusual as you might think it is. Okay, because I think that's the case a lot, I project it is. That when something is happening, so so something is happening to someone else, someone that you love. We have projected so much of ourselves into that person, onto that person. We're so invested in them that to lose them, we would lose huge parts of ourselves.
Hmm.
That's the fear. That's the feeling. You know, I couldn't live. So, you know, if I really love somebody and they die, there's this feeling that I'm going to die too because I won't be able to stand the amount of pain that I would feel.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
it. And sometimes, of course, people do choose to die because they don't want to go on living with that level of pain from that loss.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Even though, as I think you're indicating, the other person might actually be more all right with it than I am.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally a possibility. Mm-hmm.
But in that way that, you know, my favorite example of this is going through childbirth myself was one thing. Watching my best friend give birth was one of the most terrifying experiences I've ever had. Right? Because when I was doing it, I was completely involved. Right? It takes all your attention to do something like that. But standing by helplessly watching somebody else in that level of pain is really, really hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah? So,
yeah.
Again, we could twist it, or we could let conditioning twist it to make it be something selfish. You know, I've lost sight of them. I'm just focused on me. How selfish is that? But I think that we lose a lot of possibility when we let that kind of interpretation settle onto the experience that you're having.
Okay.
Which translates for me into, it sounds like the work you need to do is to know for yourself that you can stand the way you feel.
Yeah. That is likely it, because I've just never thought about it in that terms. I mean, when I keep breaking it down, but if it just comes down to, I can't stand the way I feel, if you're having a hard time, then that seems like something I can work with.
Yeah. Yeah. And blessedly, it's the kind of thing we can practice with over time. Right? So something happens to a loved one of mine, and I stay with the pain that I'm feeling over that, and practice remaining as open to them as I can, and taking responsibility for being with the person in me, the part of me that is feeling all of that pain. So now I can be present to my loved one, and I can practice being present to myself.
Yeah.
And both can be having, each of those people can be having whatever experience they're having, and my work is to be present to that and accepting of that, embracing it, allowing it, and knowing that I'm okay. And so are they.
Yeah.
That we're all equal to our lives.
Yeah. Well, that's really good to hear. And I think, I really do think that is where my work is. And I think what's going on for me right now is it just seems like there's a lot of content and there's a lot of things going on for all these people around me that I care about. And none of it's happening to me. But
right.
It's just, it has kind of a wearing down.
Yes. So instead of, if we really get it, that my way of talking about it is we all choose our karma. You know, when it comes right down to it, we wouldn't change lives with anybody. We just wouldn't.
Yes.
And so each of these people that you love is living out their life, and they're, you know, the most respectful thing I think we can do for people is to assume their adequacy, to trust that they're having these experiences because those are the experiences that they need to have to wake up and end suffering. And so all we can do is be as accepting and loving as we can possibly be in any given moment. And our work is to save the person that we are.
Yeah.
So in that way, with conscious compassion, so conscious compassion and awareness, I bring that to the lives of my loved ones, right? Whatever they're going through, my job is compassionate acceptance and support, okay? Not doing for, not,
yeah,
no, just, yeah. And that's my work for this person. And it has to come from the same place. So if I'm taking myself, I wish language were different, okay? So
yeah.
Let's talk about Karen. So if you're taking Karen personally, you're identified with Karen, then it's a wearing down process. But if you step back into conscious compassionate awareness, the mentoring place, and you see this woman, Karen, and what she's going through, and how much she loves, how much she cares about these people, and how painful it is for her, then you, from that mentoring larger awareness, can bring comfort and care and support to Karen. And it's not a wearing down. It's actually a freeing, freeing, liberating experience.
Yeah.
Because your heart is opening. And as your heart opens, it's not opening painfully. It's opening with love and kindness and compassion. And it's able to embrace all these loved ones who are external to you. And it also embraces Karen.
Well, then that feels like that's been the kind of the missing link, I think. Because it feels like it needs to go out. And what I hear you saying is that I need to really be included in this.
That's exactly right. It does go out. It does go out. It goes out to them, and it goes out to Karen. It goes out to every human being who is kind of struggling and suffering through a human incarnation.
Okay. So, I think of what's happening is I get, instead of being able to give that to Karen, I get identified with that.
Right.
You become
Karen, who
yeah.
loves these people and feels inadequate and wants to help and can't and is afraid of just being in so
uh-huh.
much pain she's going to curl up and die and she can never do enough. And when you're identified with her, It's just sadness all the way around. But when you step back into that larger consciousness, into that mentoring place, then that larger consciousness, the unconditional love and acceptance, is available for all those human beings.
Okay, well that's really helpful. That's
good.
Really helpful.
And I want to make one other connection that I know you've heard me say 10,000 times, and it's a whole different place to hear it, okay? What
okay.
you have to prove to yourself is that there's nothing wrong. And the way that you'll prove that to yourself is by disidentifying from the personality, from the human being Karen, and stepping into that conscious, compassionate awareness. And then what you get is we go through these things because going through these things is what causes us to choose unconditional love and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And when we know that, we actually wouldn't try to stop anybody from having whatever experience they're having because we trust that that's where it's leading them. Now, I could never prove that, obviously. But
yeah.
just see if when you move into that place, you know, we look back at our lives and say, oh, wow, at the time there's a lot of that I would not have chosen. But I can see now that every step was a step on the path that brought me to this. And without each one of those steps, I might not have chosen unconditional love and acceptance. So I'm grateful And while I want to offer that unconditional love and acceptance to everyone, I don't want to interfere with their steps on their path.
Yeah. Well, I'm really happy that this is being recorded and I can listen to it and take it in and work with it, and because that it's pretty clear the way you laid it out, and it's
thick
really
and it's deep. It's thick and it's deep, and conditioned mind is going to want to close over it and say what? So yes, it is good that it's recorded, and you can break it down and transcribe it and record about it and listen to it, and because you're really ready for it all to sink in at the deepest level.
Well, good, because that's I'm just going to keep doing this until forever. I mean, until I'm not here anymore.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's our commitment.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take good care of yourself.
Okay.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. Yes, you will. Bye bye.
Good. Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Karen. Well, I think I have my homework assignment, Sherry. Maybe we all do, too.
Yeah. It's a good one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Talk to you next week.
Okay, great.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.